I'm Flora Lichtman, and this is The Adapters.
We've got Hot Dots, Stereo Call on Tennesseeansie is Tennessee Twist, La Prairie Lineta is Appalachian Dust Bunnies, Sansonella crossophylla is Old Gray Cross Lobes. Lichens are amazing. Do you need to know more?
This is James Lundemer. He's a lichenologist at the New York Botanical Garden. And you know what? I am totally going to back him up on this. Lichens are really cool.
They're just quite spectacular. You know, they vary from these long growths on trees, old man's beard, these things that sort of hang down and are really long and pendulous, like hair coming down out of a tree.
Lichens are actually a mashup of algae and fungus. They're those frilly blue-green toupees you sometimes see on tree trunks. You may also know them as the spatterings of bright yellowy-green on rocks. And even if you've never seen one yourself, you've probably heard of them. You know the manna from heaven that appeared to the Israelites in the desert? Well, scientists have done some research and have suggested that manna might have been a lichen. Another claim to fame, lichens have traveled to space. This is James's grad student, Jessica Allen.
Yeah, they took them up there and, you know, not only were they like in the space station or whatever, they actually exposed them to the vacuum for multiple days and they brought them down and got them wet again and it was totally fine.
No problem?
No problem.
Weirdly, although they can survive the vacuum of space, they don't really do well with human impact. And things seem to be getting worse for lichens.
Lichens are really sensitive to air pollution. We like to say that they're exquisitely sensitive to air pollution.
Why do you like to say that?
Well, because it sounds a lot better than very. You would say that they're very good indicators of habitat quality. Yeah, lichens are the canary in the coal mine that has been singing for well over 100 years, and we really have yet to listen to them.
So James and Jessica, along with some other colleagues, have been doing among the largest lichen surveys in history in the eastern United States to try to figure out what's happening to them, which means that they spend weeks on end hiking miles in forests and along the coast with their noses to the trees, trying to document every kind of lichen they could find.
We surveyed over 300 sites. We made more than 17,000 collections. So that means that there's more than 17,000 pieces of lichens that traveled from their homes in the swamps of eastern North Carolina, eastern South Carolina, Delaware, to New York Botanical Gardens.
In baggies? How did they get here?
They came in little paper bags. I think we probably single-handedly keep the paper bag business operational in this country. And so once that happens, then it's all sort of in these thousands of nice, neatly curated, acid-free envelopes that have this label on them, on each one. And they all go into our herbarium and they're filed away. It's like the evidence locker for the sort of biodiversity crisis. That's how I like to think of it. And we're the detectives.
The detectives took me to the evidence locker.
The lichens are in the back corner here.
This is the largest lichen collection in the Western Hemisphere. So there are more than 250,000 specimens of dried lichens here.
It just looks like a massive filing cabinet.
It is. And it's really well organized, thankfully.
One of the cool things about being a lichenologist is that there aren't that many other lichenologists. So you often find new species and you get to name whatever new species you find.
Jacuiella dollypartoniana.
James and Jessica named one that they found on a mountaintop overlooking Tennessee after Dolly Parton.
We were standing there, you know, clouds rolling in and rhododendrons all around us. And we said, what could be more fitting than to name a species that occurs in this really spectacular region for someone who's sort of done so much for it?
That is Jacuiella dollypartoniana.
So it's like a dusting of green and then tiny little brown dots, raised brown dots.
Well, that's it.
What response have you gotten from Dolly?
Well, we haven't heard from Dolly yet. We're waiting.
Dolly Partoniana, like all lichens, is a coat of many colors.
Yeah, so lichens are a composite organism. They're a symbiosis that's formed between an alga and a fungus. The fungus is sort of providing a home for this alga. And it's actually protecting it from the harsh environment outside. So it's protecting it from UV radiation, from extreme temperature, from drying out too much, things like that. And what the alga is doing in return is it's producing food, basically, sugars and things like that, that are consumed by the fungus.
So the fungus makes the home, and the alga makes the food, puts dinner on the table?
Yep. But it has to do it every day.
I feel like lichens are amazing for this reason. Like, I just think it's so awesome that you could have an inter-kingdom cooperation like this. It's so hopeful. Like, we can't even get along, the same species. We can't even, like, make it work. But these two kingdoms can come together and live peaceably and sustainably.
Well, I mean, we should all look for lichens for inspiration for many aspects of our lives.
Lichens also do a lot for their ecosystem. They help break down rocks. They absorb and release moisture into the air. They keep the desert from blowing away. They provide food for animals like caribou. But in the last couple hundred years, lichens have lost a lot of their habitat due to deforestation.
Oh my goodness, that's fabulous. Look at that.
Jessica showed me this big specimen collected in the mid-1800s in New Jersey.
This is Lobaria pulmonaria.
It looks like a head of frilly lettuce, flattened and about the size of a dinner plate. But it doesn't exist in Jersey anymore.
Up here, you never see it. Have you found Lobaria pulmonaria in Jersey ever?
No, I've...
It's pretty incredible.
What a difference a century can make.
Besides losing habitat, lichens have a new challenge to contend with, changing climate. Jessica has this project looking specifically at lichens in the southern Appalachians. So that's western North Carolina, eastern Tennessee, and southern Virginia. And she found a bunch of lichens in this region that only live at very specific temperatures and at specific elevations. And then she modeled how climate change is likely to affect these species.
And unfortunately, it looks like, you know, basically within 50 to 70 years, they're projected to lose up to 90 or even 100% of their suitable habitat, which means that, you know, they're potentially going to go extinct, likely as a result of mountaintop extinction, which is a phenomenon that's really potentially going to impact a lot of biodiversity worldwide.
So species that live in lower elevations can try to climb to higher and cooler ground as climate warms. But species like these lichens that live at the tops of mountains, they don't have anywhere else to go. And this could mean extinction for certain sensitive lichen species.
Yeah, so it's really a big deal and it's really going to happen fast. And when I first ran these models, I thought that I'd done something wrong. I redid the entire analysis from scratch like 8 times. And made sure I was doing all of the best practices, doing everything right, because I just couldn't believe it. But that's what it is.
To a lichenologist, obviously, the thought of losing a lot of lichens is an urgent and terrible problem. But most people don't think like lichenologists.
Lichens and fungi in general are sort of the ideal cultural touchstone to talk to people about Earth's biodiversity, especially the sort of the 99%, the millions of species that are doing tremendous things for our planet and for us, but we don't really appreciate or understand much about their existence. You know, the things that aren't polar bears and aren't, you know, reindeer and aren't tigers and things like that.
Can I just interrupt you for 1 second?
Yes.
Are you comparing polar bears to the 1%?
No, I would never do such a thing.
I think you just did.
I don't recall that.
I love that analogy.
Well, I mean, you know, it's certainly apt. It's not to say that polar bears are not, you know, greatly threatened and shouldn't be protected. But yet, you know, there are millions of other species on this planet that are equally imperiled and receive no attention whatsoever.
I want to talk about why we should care about that. Why should we care?
Well, we should care about that because every time you lose a species, regardless of what it is, be it a lichen or a polar bear, you're losing a link in a vital chain. And you can only break so many of those links, lose so many of those nodes in a food web, in a network, before something happens. And so the question is, and it's really an open-ended question, the question is, how does that impact us? Because it must, right?
But what is that impact? Like, if all the lichen went extinct in the world, I think humans probably could make it.
Could we? I think that's an open question.
The reason I'm pushing on this is that I wonder if this is the best, if this is the strongest argument for lichen conservation. In other words, why do we always have to relate it to a service that an organism is providing for us?
So that's certainly true. I mean, I don't necessarily think that lichens should have to justify their existence to us to justify their conservation and continued existence on this planet.
This is the rub, right? We do control the fate of other species, and so we have to be convinced that it's worth checking our own species' development to protect these other species. So let me just throw in one more reason to care about lichens, and it's surface and petty and not scientific at all. I like how they add to the complexity of the landscape, and I love how they don't look like any other living thing. And I really like knowing that fungus and algae cooperate to make this new life form. That adds richness to my life. Jessica, if all the lichens went extinct, do you think that we would notice a difference?
Absolutely. Oh my gosh, yes, absolutely. If they were all gone, there's no question about that.
Well, what would the world look like?
It would be so sad. I mean, just aesthetically, you would lose so much color and variety and these beautiful orange and yellow splashes across the rocks, and they grow right on the soil. And then you learn about symbiosis, and they just so capture your imagination, and there's so much work to still be done on them. They would just lose this really beautiful part of our biodiversity. It's amazing.
This podcast was produced by me, Flora Lichtman, and Catherine Wells.
Just one thing before we move on.
That's Catherine, who is joining the interview by phone. And there's just this one more thing that we wanted to include. It didn't, like, quite fit perfectly because it's not really about a lichen.
You told me this amazing story about...
Oh, Fungus Man. Yeah. So in the Pacific Northwest, in the Haida Gwaii culture, the creation story centers around Fungus Man. So not a lichen, but a fungus, who rode raven to the land of female genitalia, which is what resulted in all of us.
Wow.
Yeah, you can take a moment to process that. We owe our existence to a bracket fungus. If you Google Fungus Man, I'm pretty sure that you can find some great images of that.
What about the land of...
Oh, the land of female genitalia?
Yeah, can you Google that?
I don't know if I would recommend doing that, at least not at work. Consult with your IT department first.
Editing by Christopher Intagliata. Robin Wise is our technical director. Mary Beth Kirshner is the managing producer. Music by Poddington Bear. You can get all the details on the music on our website, theadapters.org. We are also trying to tweet more, so you can find us there at The Adapters. This is a project of Sound Vision Productions with support from the Sloan Foundation.